Good morning, everybody. I'm Karen Garrison, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's through the grace of God and the power of Alcoholics Anonymous that I've been sober since May 30th, 1982, and that doesn't make me a miracle.
Thank you.
That doesn't make me a miracle. It makes AA a miracle, let me tell you. And if you're new here today, I want to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I always call it God's magnificent AA, the program that saved my life, and it's going to save yours too if you want to take a few quick actions. And I suggest strongly that you get a sponsor, that you get that book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and you get busy, and everybody else is doing around here, and you're going to stay sober as I've stayed sober for 18 years, and people like me cannot stay sober, I can guarantee you. My home group is the Pacific Group in West LA, a group I'm very, very proud to be a member of, just as I'm sure you're proud to be a member of yours. And I guess if you're not proud, you ought to get a job and you might change your mind. I have a job of mine and I'm proud to have that job. I want to thank Jackie and her mom Sandy and the committee for inviting me. This is an honor and a privilege. It's one that I do not take lightly, I'll guarantee you. You guys, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I really do. And I think that it shows, and I make an awful lot of mistakes and I do an awful lot of things wrong. But I'll tell you one thing, that I love you. Make no mistake about that. You know, I've been taught to do an awful lot of things before I ever wrote my big mouth. And one thing is to talk to my sponsor. And Clancy sent you his love and very best wishes this morning. And if anybody in this room is wondering why I have a man for a sponsor and why I have Clancy for a sponsor, it's really quite simple. I did not get sober in California. I got sober in a place called Lincoln, Nebraska. And I was not doing well in Alcoholics Anonymous in Nebraska. I went through 19 sponsors at a rapid clip. And I'm certainly not proud of it as I stand here this morning. And thank God for the old-timers in AA, because somebody loved me enough to get my current sponsor. And I got to tell you that my life has done nothing but totally, completely turn around as a result of that. And I absolutely adore the ground that man walks on. I talked to him a few moments ago. He's out of town speaking also. And he said, well, get up there and share your experience, your strength, and your hope, and tell those people what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. Ignore the old-timers. They got it. They don't need your inspiration, my dear. And talk directly to those new people, the life and blood of AA. And I believe it as I stand here, and I welcome you, and I hope that you stay. And then I think I did, without a doubt, the most important thing I can ever do, and that's to say, God, please let me say what you want me to say to these people. God is very much a part of my life today, you guys. It did not used to be that way for me, I can guarantee you. You know, I am just delighted to be here. My baby Jackie introduced me, and to watch Jackie stand here almost 6 years sober is just awesome to me. I worked with this woman when she was still drinking, you guys, and I told her one day, I said, you drink one more time, I'm out of here, you know, and she's never drank again, you know, and hopefully that she never does. But, you know, she's a great member of AA. I'm very, very pleased and proud of her as I stand here today, I'll tell you. But, you know, I hate this platform up here. It just scares me to death. And every time I get on these platforms, the hair on my neck stands straight up, and I'll tell you why. When I first heard my sponsor speak in Kearney, Nebraska a long time ago, he was one of these platforms, and Clancy was sitting at a table like this, and this young man back here's daddy introduced my sponsor, Dick M. from Bellevue, Nebraska, and Clancy got up out of his chair, and the back leg of his chair got caught on the rear end of the platform, and he fell backwards, you know. And I it was the first time I'd ever seen Clancy, and I mean, I was just in hysterics laughing. I mean, it was the funniest thing I've ever seen. And I thought, well, God, I hope he's not hurt and stuff. And he got up. He was like a ruffled chicken, you know. And he got up the podium, and I will never forget this. He said, a newcomer would have gotten hurt to fall like that, you know. And I thought, oh, my God. And I fell in love with my sponsor, let me tell you. And then Jimmy's dad introduced him, and he said, when Dick gave up the microphone so quick it scared me and I fell over backwards, you know. But you know, like I said earlier, you guys, I've been sober since May 30th, 1982. It was not always my sobriety date. When I got my current sponsor, I had to change that date, and there's a reason for that. I'm one of these people who had to go smoke dope when I got sober, and, you know, if you're smoking marijuana in this room today, you are not sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I will tell you right this minute, and I don't want to argue about it afterwards. Ask any old-timer if you don't believe me, and if I have to change my date, then by God, so do you. But anyway, I got my current sponsor, and I tried to explain to him where I'm from in Lincoln, Nebraska, where Jimmy's from in Omaha. It's not like this at all, but where I'm from in Lincoln, you can have two sobriety dates, one from alcohol and one from drugs. And he pointed out to me that I was in Southern California. We had one date here to get my date changed, and I was such a smart aleck when I got my current sponsor, and I said, where does the book mention pot? He said, well, the book does mention pot. And I said, Clancy, I have read that book. It does not talk about marijuana in that book. And he said, if I find the word pot in that book, will you change your sobriety and never argue with me again? And I knew I was making a bad deal, you guys, but I did it anyway. And I'll be damned if he didn't flip open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And on the first page of Bill Wilson's story, it says, died by musket or by pot. And I said, that is not what that means. He said, I don't care what it means. Change your sobriety date. You said the book didn't mention pot. It does mention pot in the subject, you know. And it's kind of been like that with me for Clancy for a number of years. But I don't have to know why. I just got to do it, you know. But anyway, I'm also delighted you don't have a glass podium. You can see your speaker. I had this terrible experience on the East Coast. I was out there giving a talk, and rather than my talk, my skirt fell off in front of 3,000 people. And they had this podium where, you know, it was a glass podium. You could see the speaker, and that makes me nervous anyway. And I had this black suit on with this wraparound skirt, and the button came, and I thought, my God, my skirt's going to fall on the floor. And it was too late. It was on the floor. But you guys, you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous taught me to wear underwear, and thank God I had some on. Also, Tommy, where's that Miami Hurricane football team at? Did you? You know, today, you know, my life is so good today, you guys, I can't begin to tell you. And, you know, sometimes I forget how bad it was. And for this weekend, it's just been coming back and hitting me right and left. I heard, you know, when Polly's husband, Dave, talked last night, when Dave Pistol talked last night, I thought, my God, I have never heard Dave that good. He was just fabulous last night. I just get a great AA talk. And he brought up things that I'd forgotten about in my own story and so on and so forth. But, you know, that's the value of getting to do this kind of stuff. You know, you get to hear these people over and over and again. And every time I hear a lot of these people, it's always a different thing when I hear them. And it's just a treat to be around these people. I admire every single one of these speakers that are here today. They've been dear friends of mine for a long, long time. And, you know, sometimes I'm with speakers that I don't like at all. You know, if you want to know the truth, you don't have to like everybody here if you're new here today. I have to respect them and be nice to them, but I don't have to like them particularly. And I just love these people, let me tell you. So it's just a treat to be here. But, you know, when I got my sponsor 17 years ago, I'd had the same sponsor for 17 out of my 18 years of sobriety, and I had previous 19 before that. But anyway, when I got my current sponsor, he asked me to write an inventory. And I said, I wrote an inventory in treatment. He said, I said, write an inventory. You know, he had to say things to me about 3 or 4 times before I finally shut up. And I said, but I wrote an inventory. And he said, and what kind of an inventory was that? And I said, he said, was it a good one? I said, well, no, you know, it wasn't a good one. And as a matter of fact, it was a horrible inventory, if you want to know the truth. The priest I read it to told me to get out of his office. He said, hey, one of these days you might want to get honest and you might stay sober here. Get out of my office. I don't want to hear this stuff. And it was all about everybody else and what they'd done to me, you know. But anyway, I wrote another one after that, and it was even, I think, worse than the first one. But anyway, I got my current sponsor, and I said, okay. And I said, well, I'll get it done. He said, I want you to do it a specific way. I want you to do it according to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want it done. I want you to make plans to fly to California. I still live in Nebraska then. And I want you to read that to me. Well, my mind flips from the hell with the inventory. I'm going to California. You know, that's all I think about. And, anyway, obviously, I didn't get that inventory done. And I flew out to California, walked into my sponsor's office at the midnight mission. And he said, where's your inventory? I said, well, I didn't get it done. I thought he just, oh, well, next week, my dear, you know. And I thought I have never seen him so mad at anybody before ever. And I thought he was going to drop his dentures. I really did. He was so mad at me. And he said, you get in that boardroom and get that inventory written, or you can fly yourself back to Nebraska and find yourself a different sponsor. And I thought, oh, I mean, you know, our book talks about we finally hit a wall here, you know, where you can't no longer lie, steal, or cheat your way out of. And I was in that corner, let me tell you. And I knew I had to get it done. He said, you get in there and get busy. And he came in there one time, and I was just sitting there pondering the whole thing. And he said, if I walk in here one more time, that pin's not on the paper, I'm done with you, Karen, and I'm not playing games with you. And I started writing my inventory. And I know what that inventory is about. It's about the exact nature of my wrongs. And I just didn't want to get it done, if you want to. I don't know anybody that does, do you? But I got it done, and I took that notorious ride up to Oxnard, California that night with my sponsor, and we read it by flashlight, you know. Clancy thinks if you're moving in a car that your babies are more honest because they can't see the sponsor's face he's driving. But anyway, I read my inventory to my sponsor, and you know, he didn't even bat an eye, you guys. And we pinpointed like 280 amends I needed to make, and it was just, you know. And I told my sponsor, I said, I don't feel good about that. I thought you were supposed to feel good when you read an inventory of your sponsor. And he said, where did you hear that from? And I said, well, I've heard a lot of people talk about it, how they feel so wonderful. And he said, you know, Karen, I'm going to tell you something. He said, I didn't feel good when I read mine to my sponsor. It showed me exactly what I was about. He said, you feel good when you make your amends here. That's what it's about. The meat of the program is in those amends and stuff. And he said, so I wouldn't worry about what other people say from podiums. Why don't you just go from your own personal experience and so forth? He said, you're not doing anything wrong. So he said, get busy on those amends. And, you know, you guys, I was $86,000 in debt when I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I saw no way out of that, let me tell you. And I wanted to file bankruptcy. Everybody in AA around me was filing bankruptcy. Why can't I? My sponsor said, then get a different sponsor. You're paying your bills back. You're paying this money back. And so I figured out a way to do that. And like last April, I made my last payment to Nebraska of $800, and I'm $86,000 out of debt now, Alcoholics Anonymous. It only took me 16 short years to do it, you know, but by God, I did it. And I know the sense of freedom as I stand here today. I just bought a brand new car with a Bank of America loan. They didn't even question my loan. However, the guy that ran the numbers told me, he said, did you have a credit problem at one time? And I thought, baby, you have no idea. And I said, yeah, I sure did. And he said, but it all got paid back. He said, according to the computer. And I said, well, yeah, every cent's paid back. He said, that's all we care about. Get the car and go. You know, and I thought, I know the value of paying your bills here and stuff. And I know some people have to file bankruptcy, and I'm not debating that, you guys. But my sponsor told me, he said, you figure out a way to do it. It's a possibility for you. And so I'm so glad I could. And I never would have done that without sponsorship. I never would have done that. I'd have filed bankruptcy and said, the hell with it, you know. And that man has taught me so many things here that are so good for me, let me tell you. And anyway, he told me, he said, you know, start making your amends and stuff. And he said, the first one I want you to make here is probably going to be the hardest one you ever do. I had a number of years ago been to Las Vegas with a girlfriend of mine, and we'd traveled and worked together for many, many years, and I loved it. She was my best friend in the whole world, and I stole $50 out of her suitcase. No, it was $40 out of her suitcase, and because I ran short of cash, and I thought, well, I'm just going to borrow this and go win some money out of the slot machines, and then I'll pay it back to her. Well, you know, that never happens, and so, you know, I didn't have any money to pay it back, and you know, she never said a word about that, you guys, over the years. And I thought about that every single day I was out there drinking, and years went by, and it was just eating my lunch. And I know it sounds really petty, but it wasn't petty to me, let me tell you, and I've done a lot worse things than that. But anyway, he said, I want you to call that woman up and give her that $40 back and tell her what you have done. And I thought, oh, my God, and you know, she had never said a word to me about it. And he said, Karen, get it done. The step says we make direct demands, go make an appointment with her, get over there and talk to her. And I got the 12 by 12 out, and I tried to pretty this whole thing up. What can I say to make it better than it is? And he got so tired of me calling him and asking, he finally hung the phone. He says, take the goddamn money, knock on her door, hand it to her, tell her you're sorry, and walk away. He said, quit making such a big deal out of this, you know. And so anyway, he said, don't call me till you do it. And that was the end of that. So now I had to do it, right? So I called her up, and she said, well, come on over, you know. And I just shook the whole way over there, you guys. You have no idea. And anyway, I walked in her house, and she said, how are you doing? It's so good to see you. And I said, great. And I said, you know, Patty, I got to tell you something. I said, remember when we went to Vegas that one time, and, you know, and I stole $40 out of your suitcase, and I'd like to pay that back to you, and I'm so sorry. What can I do to make that right? And she looked at me, and she said, you know, I knew that you did that. And I said, why didn't you say something? And she said, because I didn't want to lose my best friend. And I thought, oh, my God. I mean, I just sat there with tears in my eyes. And she said, you know, I don't want the money. You need it more than I do. And I said, no. It was like fire in my hands. I said, no, I want you to have it. And I did, too, by God. And anyway, she said, well, I'll put it in my grandson's little piggy bank. And I thought, oh, that made me feel worse for some reason. But that was fine, whatever she wanted to do. And I left that woman's house that day. And you guys, I want to tell you what I experienced. You know, it was fall time in Nebraska, and we have really pretty falls in Nebraska. But I walked out of that woman's house, and I have never seen the sky bluer. I have never seen the grass greener. The clouds were absolutely just magnificent. And I felt the serenity, the inner peace, the peace of mind, that those promises. And I was in awe of Alcoholics Anonymous. I thought, this is just too hokey for me. Can I handle this? You know, and, I mean, I felt better than I had ever felt ever drinking or using drugs. And that's quite a statement to make, you guys. It really is. And so I know that this thing is just dynamite when you finally do what you're supposed to do. But I still balk at every single amend I've ever had to make in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, Chapter 5 says we balk at these steps, you know, and balk isn't quite the word I use, I can tell you. But anyway, another amend my sponsor pinpointed for me was many, many years ago, I found myself coming out of a blackout in Winnipeg, Canada. And the last I knew, I was in Fargo, North Dakota, visiting a boyfriend of mine. I took his car and drove off in a blackout, you know. And I didn't know that car was stolen. And I don't know how you report a stolen car stolen, but he did, you know. I've always had bad perceptions of reality my whole life. And I always think of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police on horses chasing you. I don't know they drive cars, you know. Anyway, I was going about 90 miles an hour, and I was obviously drunk and stuff. And I thought, what am I doing here? How did I get here? Winnipeg? How did I get over the border? I don't remember any of it. And that's scary. I used to always come out of blackouts and be just terrified. One would think you'd stop doing it, wouldn't you? It didn't stop me at all. Anyway, I got pulled over by this Mountie. And, you know, these guys are really nice people till you screw around with them, let me tell you. And, And this guy walked up to my car and he said, "Good evening, miss. May I see your driver's license?" And, you know, every time I'm in trouble, I'll do one thing more to make it worse every single time. And I said, "I don't live in your country and you can't tell me what to do. Don't ever do that. That's a bad move to make, let me tell you." And I found out you could exit a car more than one way that night, I'll tell you. And he pulled me right out the side view mirror, you know, practically. But anyway, I took my purse along with me, and I had this zipper on my purse, and I had a little chain on it, and I hit him in the forehead with it.
Oh.
And the blood just flew, you guys. It just flew. And long story short, I went to jail and spent 10 days in jail up there. My family get an attorney up from Nebraska to get me out of jail. It cost me about $10,000 to get out of that. And I just pretty much said, "Oh, well, he shouldn't have said that to me. You know, it wasn't my fault, the Mountie's fault, you know." And I mean, I can't believe how we think. I really can't. It always amazes me. But anyway, I read that to my sponsor, and he said, "You find that guy and make amends to him." And I said, "You know what, Clancy, when I was in jail up there, his brother is in AA, and he came to visit me." That Mountie's brother was like 25 or 20 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and he came to visit me. And he said, "Can I help you in any way?" And I said, "Yeah, you can get out of here. That's what you can do." And I just was not ready for A, but I never forgot that man. He planted a seed for me I have never forgotten. And I thought, why would anybody do that? Why would they spend time with people they don't know and so forth? And it impressed me, but at the same time, I was just too arrogant about the whole thing to even deal with it. But anyway, I read that to my sponsor. He said, "Find that Mountie and make amends to him." And so I called up, and, you know, I had no problem doing that. I know what happens when you make amends here. And I called up. It was the last amend I needed to make in Alcoholics Anonymous from the wreckage of my past. And I called Canada, and they said, "You know, miss, we destroyed those records after 5 years. We have no idea who you're even talking about." And I said, "Oh, but you have to help me. This is the only way I can find out." And they said, "We're so sorry. We have no idea. We don't keep anything about it." And I didn't have the paperwork. I threw it away a long time ago and stuff. But anyway, my sponsor told me, he said, "Karen, shut up about it. You tried to do it the steps as we tried. You know," he said, "you've done the best you can do. If it's supposed to be, it will be someday. You know, quit worrying about it. But just keep seeking. You know, just keep seeking the whole situation." And so anyway, about 6 weeks ago, I boarded a flight out of LAX to fly to Calgary, Canada. And every time I go up there to give a talk, the hair stands up on my neck. I'm always afraid they're going to keep me for some reason. And I know that mess was cleaned up, but it always scares me to go up there. And anyway, I boarded that flight, and there's this guy sitting next to me. I said hi to him, and I sat down. I really don't like to talk to people on airplanes because I bring my dirty books with me, and I like to read them, and I don't want to be bothered. But Chapter 5 says we're not saints, folks. Believe me, I can testify to that. But anyway, I said hi to this guy, and I sat down, and I won't mention the airline, but they fly in the friendly skies. And we had mechanical failure at LAX, and we were down an hour and a half more than we thought we were going to be. And by the time we got in the air, San Francisco held us 4 times. We had to make connections there, and we ran out of fuel, had to land in San Jose, and obviously the whole plane missed their connections. And people were just in a rage, I must tell you guys. And I mean, I was mad too, but I'll tell you, I was the most well-behaved on that airplane, I got to tell you. And I mean, what's the point in getting mad? What can you do about it, you know? And so we landed the plane and got the fuel, and you know, and by this time, the stewardesses were walking around drinking coffee and not offering anybody any. And I thought, how dare you, you know? And it really made me, and now I was in a rage. It doesn't take much for me to get in a rage. And my sponsors taught me, you better do something different when you're in a rage. You had better start being of service to somebody or changing your actions, because you're going to get yourself in big trouble with your temper. And so I asked this old guy sitting next to me, he had a cast on his leg, and I said, "Can I get you a cup of coffee?" And he said, "Well, that would be lovely." And he said, "You look so familiar to me." I said, "Really?" And he says, "Yeah, you do." And I said, "Oh, I wonder why." So I got him his coffee, and I came back and sat down. And he said, "What are you going to Canada for?" And I said, "Well, actually, I'm going to go up there and give an AA talk." And he said, "Really?" He said, "My brother's in AA." I said, "Wow." You know, and he said, "He's like 43 years sober, whatever." And I said, "Oh, that's wonderful. My sponsor's going to be 42 years sober." And he said, "Well, who's your sponsor?" And I told him, and he said, "Oh, I've heard Clancy talk. I went to a conference one time. My brother and Clancy was speaking." I said, "Small world, isn't it?" He said, "Yeah, it really is." And he said, "Why do you look so familiar to me?" I said, "I have no idea." And he said, "Did you ever get in trouble in Canada?" And I said, "Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, I did." And I, you know, this started getting really weird for me, you guys. And I thought, you know, this can't be. I just wonder. And I said, "You know, I presume that you're retired." And he says, "Well, yeah." And I said, "What'd you do for a living?" He said, "I was a Mountie." And I said, "Where at?" And he said, "Winnipeg." And I, you guys, the hair on my neck stood up, I'm telling you. And I got tears in my eyes. I thought, this is a 1 in 2 or 3 billion, a million shot or whatever. And he said, "What did you do in Canada?" He said, "What are you crying for?" And I said, "I don't know." I said, "Let me tell you my story, and I'll tell you what happened." And I told him what happened, and he lifted up a lock of hair, and there was the scar from 25 years ago. And I had found my Mountie, you guys. I had found him. And I said, oh, I can't believe this. And this guy thought I was just crazy, is what he thought. I was sitting there sobbing practically. We really are dramatic, aren't we? But anyway, I said, I'm so sorry I did that. And he said, well, Karen, you paid my hospital bill. Forget about it, you know. And I said, no, that's not the point here. What can I do to make it right? And he said, well, nothing. Forget about it. And he said, all right, why don't you wait on me the rest of the trip, if that makes you feel better. I said, okay, I'd be more than happy then. He said, let's call my brother. I said, let's do it. And he said, well, get your credit card out. There's the telephone. What is it, $13 a minute or whatever, you know? But I was delighted to do that, let me tell you. If that's what he wanted me to do, I was delighted to do it. And so we called his brother. And his brother was so excited, I can't begin. And he said, let me talk to Karen. He said, young lady, I am so happy that you're sober now, Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, you know, you give your home group my love. It was just a wonderful experience, you guys, and so forth. But anyway, you know, this man and I continued talking and stuff. And he told me, he said, me and the rest of the cops used to get together and we talk about the crazy women we'd arrested over the years. And you are by far the craziest. You were always my number one story, my dear. And he said, I'm so glad I got to meet you. And we're writing right now. You know, we write letters back and forth. And I sent him a picture of my grandkids. He wanted to see my grandbabies. And I thought, we're really getting carried away with this. But, you know, whatever he needs me to do, I'm more than happy to do that for him. So see what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, but I want to point something out here. If United Airlines hadn't had mechanical failure, if we hadn't been held by San Francisco, or blah, 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 that may have never happened. You know, sometimes the seemingly good comes out of the seemingly bad. If I would just seek it, if I would just be of service or do what I need to do to make myself feel better or act better or whatever. So, you know, I'm so glad this is over for me, you guys. I can't begin to tell you. My amends are made here. I have no more except for the current stuff I do, you know. And I do enough of that to keep me busy. But anyway, I wanted to share that story with you guys. You know, I hate to be a bragging grandmother up here this morning, but, you know, I hate people that do this. I hate people that do it, but when it's my grandchild, it's a whole different story, let me tell you. You know, things in my family are very, very good as I stand here today, and because of amends and so forth, and they've seen me stay sober, and therefore they became willing to have me part of their lives again. And I have got five of the most gorgeous grandbabies you have ever seen before in your life. And I have a particular one. His name is Ryan, and Ryan is 11 years old. And he's just a nice kid, you guys. I don't know where it came from, I got to tell you, but he's just a nice young man. And anyway, little Ryan apparently is quite a little gymnast. You know, and I knew he was good, but I know he was that good. And my son and his wife got a phone call from Budweiser out of St. Louis, Missouri, wanting to sponsor this kid and train him for the Olympics. And my son called me, and he said, Mom, what do you think? And my kids rarely ask me for advice, you guys, I got to tell you. And you know, I jumped from phone call to Olympic Stadium, gold medal around his neck, and what will I wear? You know, and it happened just that quick for me. And I didn't have to think about that. AA kicked in for me one more time, and I found myself saying, Jeff, he's your child. You have to do what you think is best. And he said, Mom, what do you think? We don't know what to do. He's so little. You know, he's so little to go away. And I said, you know, I wanted to shriek at him and say, it's the opportunity of a lifetime, you idiot, let him go. But I did not say that, you know. I said, you have to do what you think is right. And I said, you know, we have a friend there in Nebraska who's a child psychologist. And I said, why don't you have Chris come over and talk to Ryan and see what he thinks. And so Jeff and Lori did exactly that. And you know what that child psychologist told my son and his wife? Let him go. It's the opportunity of a lifetime. He's a very stable young man and so forth. So my little grandson is down in Norman, Oklahoma right now, trained at Nadia Comaneci and Bart Conner's clinic down there. And I don't know what's going to happen with that, but I'll tell you guys something. It makes no difference what happened. I'm so proud of him, I can't begin to tell you. And he called me on my 18th AA birthday on May the 30th, and this last May, and he called me about 10:30 at night. He says, Grandmother, this is Ryan. He said, I'm so sorry to call you, so I've been so busy all day. He said, happy AA 18th birthday. Now, I'm going to tell you guys something. That kid has never seen me drink. He has never seen me drink, but he knows how important this is to me. And he said, we are so proud of you, Grandma. And I thought, I wonder why, you know, but they really mean that, you know, and stuff. He said, you know, I took him to hear me talk one time, and his mouth was just agog, you know. And I probably shouldn't have done that. If I did it over again, I probably wouldn't take him. But anyway, you know, he got to meet the people in A, and I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe they should be there. I don't know. But he was just in shock, sort of. But I've been taught to tell the truth from podiums. I don't care who's sitting in the room, but anyway, you know, things are so good. And that phone call alone, by that phone call alone, I have been overpaid in Alcoholics Anonymous, let me tell you guys. If I get nothing else out of this program, I have been overpaid as I stand here today. And And, you know, I'm so happy in my life. I really mean that. And, you know, I'm happy with my sobriety. I'm fired up about Alcoholics Anonymous one more time this weekend. You know, I'm just in love with you, is basically what I'm trying to say. But I don't always love you. Trust me. Sometimes I hate you. I hate you so bad. I don't want to go to your meetings. I don't want to talk to my sponsor. I don't want to talk to the women I sponsor. I just want to sit there and self-pity over some crap I've gotten myself into or whatever. But, you know, thank God I've had a sponsor that has taught me. I don't care how you feel about anything. I don't care what you think, how you feel. I care about what you do. Now get off your butt and get to the meeting, you know. Those things have saved my life here. And so Dave talked about that last night when he lost his job and how he kept on no matter what was going on in his life, and it saved him. And I know that's true, boy. I know it from my own experience, from his experience, from everybody I know in AA's experience. So if you're new here today, we don't really care how you feel. We care about what you do. And I hope that you get a sponsor that feels that way too. But anyway, you know, you guys, when I was growing up in Nebraska, I was just a disruptive jerk is what I was. Always in trouble. Always kicked out of classrooms. I hated discipline. I was very, very rebellious. I literally hated people telling me what to do. And I like it even less today, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I never felt like I belonged anywhere. And I hear that a lot from AA podiums, and I'm right on with that 125%, I got to tell you. You know, I really don't remember my first drink, you guys. But I can tell you that I hope to God I never forget my last one. And I hope it was my last one. But I remember what alcohol did for me from the very beginning. It made me feel like I belonged, and I could be anything I wanted to be. I could do anything I wanted to do. I drank any given opportunity after that, and I was probably about 13 years old. You know, I realize that I'm in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous this morning, and I honor this podium by talking about alcoholism up here. I used a lot of drugs, too. I mean, that's a small part of my story. My sponsor encourages me to do that. And, you know, when I was growing up in Nebraska, there just wasn't a lot of drugs on the street. But I'll guarantee you, I found every single one of those drugs. And, you know, there was some marijuana and speed and stuff. And today, if you get caught for possession of marijuana, you get a ticket, big deal. When I was growing up, you went to prison is what happened to you. And that didn't scare me. Nothing scared me. I think I wasn't supposed to be doing them. I'm one of these alcoholic females, and I hate to say this from an AA podium, but it's precisely the way that it was for me, and we're supposed to tell the truth up here, that if you pat me on the head, my pants fall off is what happens to me. And I got myself into a lot of trouble when I was growing up. I absolutely love men. I love everything about them. You know about it, and I love it about them. They've been the downfall of my entire existence, and they remain the same today, I'm sorry to say. And I particularly like sick men, and there's a room full of them here today. I can feel it, I'll tell you. I have to tell you guys what happened to me. I love to tell this story. I have this wonderful man in my life, and this guy is a neurosurgeon at Manhattan at Columbia Hospital, and he was a visiting professor at UCLA where I work, and I'd heard all the nurses raving about this guy, this 56-year-old guy that is so good-looking. The nurses were just chasing him down, and I thought, why don't you just get your work done and quit worrying about men? You know, I'm not into that so much as like I used to be. But anyway, this guy walked up to me, and he was introduced to me, and I thought, oh, my God, I know what they're talking about. I mean, he was good-looking, let me tell you, and he's not married, and, you know, why not, you know? And anyway, I thought, well, you know, quit gawking at him, and I introduced myself, and I'm in charge of that operating room, so I introduced myself, and I said, welcome to UCLA, and how long will you be here? And he said, 6 months. I said, great, you know, we'll have a good time while you're here. And I just basically left and did my work. And anyway, about 2 hours later, this guy walked up to the desk, and he said, I'd like to ask you to have coffee with me. And I said, why would I do that? I don't even know you, you know. And he said, well, for Christ's sakes, I have credentials. And I said, well, I don't care what you have. I don't know you. I don't go out with strange men. Oh, please. I don't anymore. Anyway, he said, well, can't we just have a cup of coffee? I said, okay. Eventually, I said, okay. And so he said, how about this weekend? And I said, well, I can't do it this weekend because I'm out speaking somewhere. And he looked at me really weird. And he said, well, how about next weekend? And I said, I can't. I'm speaking somewhere. It was the truth. I was. And he said, well, what are you talking about? Nursing? And I said, no. He said, then what are you talking about? And I said, alcoholism. He said, Karen, are you in AA? I said, well, yeah, I am. And he said, I'm 33 years sober. Aww. And I thought, Jesus Christ, I'm dealing with the old timer that gigs up here, you know. And anyway, long story short here, I started dating this man, and he's just a lovely man, you guys. I got to tell you, this man's asked me to be his wife. And no, I don't want to get married. I'm sorry, but I don't. You know, I don't do well being married. I just want to have a good time with him and just have fun. I said, why do you have to do this? Just can't we just have a good time, you know? And he said, well, you know, I'm in love with you. Anyway, you know, we get along so well, and I'll tell you why. He lives in New York, I live in L.A. We see each other once a month or twice a month or whatever, And I want it to stay that way. You know, I don't want to see somebody every day. I just am past that point in my life where I want to be married. I've done that, been there, done that. No, thank you. I'm done with that. And he doesn't get it, you know. And I talked to him before I flew up here, and he said, you know what? He said, well, what are you going to do if I start dating somebody else? I said, knock yourself out. Bang. And the phone went dead, you know. And he called me back. He said, I didn't mean that, Karen. I said, then what did you say it for? You know, I said, please don't say that to me anymore. You know, I don't want to get married. I love you dearly, but I want to get married. So, I don't know. I mean, I have him in my life much longer. I don't know. But you know what? I've had a great time with this guy. He's just been a gentleman to me and one of the first few gentlemen I've dated in my life, I got to tell you. And he's just a tremendous example of Alcoholics Anonymous. He got sober when he was in medical school. He was doing a lot of drinking, went to medical school at Columbia. And two of his professors took him and drug him to the old Mustard Seed Group in New York City. He's had the same sponsor for 33 years and goes to 4 meetings a week. He's done that for 33 years of his sobriety. And you know, he sponsors a lot of guys there. But he has a real low profile in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, but I'll tell you something. He helps a lot of people. I've met them, and they adore him, let me tell you guys. And, you know, he came from a home there in New York. He was adopted. His mom and dad were killed when he was 2 years old in a car accident. And his mom and dad adopted 6 more kids. And they were just lovely people and so forth. And he was so kind to his parents. And that's what I love about him the most. He bought his mom and dad a home on Long Island. And I've been to that home. His mom and dad are dead now and so forth. But, you know, what a tremendous example he has been to me. He's not my sponsor, obviously. But I mean, what an example he's been to me of the what can happen for you if you're willing to take the actions in Alcoholics Anonymous. But anyway, I wanted to share that. You know, my life never ceases to amaze me. It continues to be very, very exciting here if I continue doing what I'm supposed to be doing and stuff. But anyway, I got pregnant when I was 16 years old, and I had to get married and all this kind of stuff. And I married a guy that used to come home and beat the hell out of me on a daily basis. And we did not get, see why I don't want to get married again, you guys? But anyway, we had 2 beautiful kids as a result of that marriage. And by the time I was 17 years old, I had 2 babies, you know. And it was like the blind leading the blind, let me tell you. Neither one of us had a job. We had no education. It was just very, very difficult, let me tell you. And as I stand here today, I know who put myself in that position. I put myself there, you know. But anyway, somebody had to work, and I found a job as a nurse's aide there in Nebraska, and I fell in love with nursing, and I made a plan to myself. I would love to go to school. I'd love to become a registered nurse. That's what I would love to do. And, you know, they say that alcoholics don't have willpower, and I'm here to tell you from this podium that that is a bunch of crap. I have more willpower than 20 elephants. When I want to do well, I'm going to do well. I don't have 1 ounce of willpower when it comes to my disease. But when I want to do something, I'm going to do it. And I went back. I finished junior high. I finished high school. I went to college full-time for 3 years, and I worked full-time for 3 years. And I'm talking about 18, 20 hours a day, you guys, and that is hard stuff to do. I did not drink, not use any drugs during this period of time. At the age of 27 years old, I became a registered nurse. And if you think I'm proud to stand here and tell you this morning that I got jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing in Nebraska, and they told me, you are a disgrace to your profession, you're a disgrace to nursing, you're a disgrace to medicine, you are no longer working because we just jerked your nursing license. If you think I'm proud of that, you are sadly wrong. You guys, I love my profession, and I really, really mean that. And I would never do anything to jeopardize the people that I take care of, nor the people that I work with in ordinary circumstances. And what I had to tell you today is a story about how I threw it right down the toilet so I could drink. And that is total insanity. It's also called alcoholism. At the age of 27 years old, I divorced this man. And girls, I got to tell you, a whole new world opened up to me, and it's called men and alcohol. And I went absolutely hog wild is what I did. I was engaged 8 times during that divorce. I never did marry these people. 2 of them died from alcoholism, for Christ's sakes. I don't know anything about social drinking. I drank, and with alcoholics, and we do indeed die from this. And at the age of 27 years old, I went to work in surgery at a hospital there in Lincoln, and I had that job for 19 years. I love working in the operating room. I love taking care of those patients. It's a colorful, exciting nursing position. I drank, ran with medical people mostly. They were colorful, intense people. They worked hard and they played hard. And I need to tell you guys that the incidence of alcoholism amongst my profession is tremendously high. And that'll do a lot for your security if you're going to have surgery next week. That has to be very, very true. And those people are so grateful that I'm sober that they can't see straight. And I'm talking about alcoholics is what I'm talking about. You know, in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says clearly that we're to tell in the general way what our drinking was like. And you're going to get the general idea real quick of what my drinking was like. I can tell you guys about my drinking about 5 seconds, but I know the truth. Many, many years ago, I was at a concert in upstate New York called Woodstock. That's exactly what my drinking was like. It was all about Woodstock. That Woodstock they had 3-4 summers ago was a piece of crap compared to the one I went to. There will never be another Woodstock, trust me on that. The Kiss in the 60s threw a party that nobody will ever match, I am quite sure. And New York got wind they're going to have this big event. And they told these people, if you don't get medical coverage, you're not going to have this concert. So they started hiring people from the Midwest because they thought be more responsible. And we were a seedy lot, I can assure you. And I was the first alcoholic scientist to find 9 girls I worked with to join me. We made about 80 doctors from the East Coast, and there we were at Woodstock. I never seen so much alcohol in one place in my entire life. You could have floated a battleship with no problem whatsoever. And the drugs, it was like a candy store. And everybody was sharing, we were sharing narcotics along with everybody else. And anyway, we had this great big semi-truck on the back lot of Woodstock, and that was our hospital park back there. And I don't recall being in that semi the entire week. But I do recall what it was like to stand from the stage at night that Richie Havens sang Freedom, and Joe Cocker and Country Joe and Santana, those groups that I love. I come from the roaring 60s, you guys, and I love rock and roll, let me tell you. And things have not changed in my life one little tiny bit. I loved Elvis Presley, and Janis Joplin was my lady, let me tell you. Wouldn't Janis Joplin have been a fine member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you guys? I'd have hung out with Janis, let me tell you. I'd have traded Janis for Clancy any day of the week if you wanted the truth. That's the biggest lie I ever told. I wouldn't trade my sponsor for anybody. I really didn't. But you know, drinking for me at one time was a fun thing, you guys. It'd be a lie for me to stand this morning and say anything but that. But I cannot remember the fun after the pain that it caused me. And one more time, I am so grateful for this program. I can't begin to tell you. And you're going to soon see why and stuff. But anyway, long story short, I don't want to spend a lot of time on my drinking, you guys. I want to get into these steps and stuff. But anyway, my sponsor told me a long time ago, he said, you have got one of the worst drinking histories I've ever heard from a woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you have got to do every single thing that we offer here in order to stay sober, and you've got to do it and do it big time. And, you know, AA literally is the center core of my very existence, you guys, and every one of our speakers here today, I mean, I know that Benoist and Al-Anon, but I know that Al-Anon's the very center core of her very existence, and the rest of the AA speakers, I know they feel that way. I've heard them talk about that before and stuff, but anyway, you know, I'm going to give you one or two really quick drinking stories and get my recovery here. You know, after the drunk driving charges and the bad checks, all the stuff that we eventually do, you know, my kids were in trouble, and I thought to myself, you know, I need to get married to my ex-husband again. That's what I need to do. That was my next brilliant thought, I'll tell you. And the kids need their dad, and besides that, I need to get even with him for all the things he's done to me. And those are not very good reasons to get married again, I got to tell you. And I'm certainly not proud as I stand here today. And you know, if anybody in this room is thinking about getting married to the same person twice, don't do it. You're going to be sorry. The only way I can describe it is like taking a bite out of the same turd twice, if you will. I'm sorry, but that's the way I feel. And I danced that man through 3 of the most miserable years of his life on the face of this earth. And I love to tell you guys this story, but I'm to tell you. And my sponsor always tells me that is not funny, and you should not be telling that from AA podiums. And I said, okay, fine, then I won't tell anymore. And he said, no, go ahead and tell it to those people, see how sick you really were, and apparently how sick he really still are. And I'm still sick, and I still think it's funny, and I'm telling the story. When I married him again, I told him, I said, if you ever hit me again, buddy, I'll kill you next time you hit me. And he said, I'll never hit you again ever. And I said, you better see that you don't. And he lied is what he did. And he came home drunk one night, and I happened to be sober this night for some reason, and I'll never know why, because I usually wasn't. And girls, you know what guys do when they come home drunk? They want to take you to bed and stuff, and I was not buying it. There's anything I can't stand at some drunk man mauling me when I'm sober. And I we'll say that when the shoe's under their foot, though, it's fine with me. And that guy came home and indicated that to me. And I said, you get your hands off me and leave me alone. I wanted nothing to do with him, period. And he broke my arm is what he did. And I'm here to tell you guys that I was pissed. As a matter of fact, I'm still pissed about it, if you want to know the truth. And I told him, I said, you go to sleep on that couch, and so help me God, when you wake up, you're going to wish you'd never been born. And he sat up for hours, you guys, his eyes pried open. And as it must be, he finally passed out. And I started drinking martinis, and this is a classic example of what alcohol did for me. Alcohol told me what to do. I didn't tell it what to do. And I had about 8-10 martinis, and I was feeling no pain, I can assure you. And I was sitting there watching this guy. And I hate to tell you what this man was doing, but I can't tell you the story unless I tell you what he was doing. He was laying on the couch playing with himself. And I thought, you disgusting man, you make me sick to my stomach. And the more I drank, the madder I got. And you guys, you know, I'm a nurse, and I'm very familiar with male anatomy. And I'd be very familiar with male anatomy if I wasn't a nurse. But anyway, I thought to myself, what can I do to get even with this guy for all the things that he's done to me? And I came with this brilliant idea in my drunken stupor. That's one thing we should never do, folks, is drink and think at the same time, I got to tell you. This is many, many years ago, you guys, when super glue first came out. And super glue was powerful stuff. You didn't want to screw around with super glue. And I got that super glue. I read the directions on that super glue. And like I said, I was drunk and I wasn't seeing very clearly. And what I thought those directions said were, if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 15 hours. Now, why would it say something stupid like that? What it said, in fact, is if this hits human skin, you better get it off within 5 minutes, is what it said. And I went over to this guy, and I poured super glue all over this guy's groin, and I mean everywhere. There was not one place this man not have super glue, and I laughed about it, and I went to bed. And I woke up in the morning to screams of horror like you cannot even believe. And, you know, I did not mean to hurt this guy as bad as I did, and I swear to God that's true. But I'll tell you what happened, my ex-husband. This guy never had the advantage of being circumcised when he was born, and now he clearly was, I can assure you. And we had a telephone by our bed in there in Lincoln. He called the police, and the cops right in front of their home with their sirens going. There was an ambulance out there. The neighbors were gawking out of their windows. And one thing you guys got to keep in mind here, they do not see things like this happen in Nebraska. In California, it wouldn't surprise me one bit, but certainly not there. And the cops were laughing, which led me the whole thing was funny. And they said, lady, are you crazy or what? Why would you do something like this? And you guys, I looked at those cops and I said, what makes you think that I did it anyway? I was only standing there with glue on my hands, for Christ's sakes. And they said, you're under arrest for assault and battery. And I said, you cannot arrest wives in Nebraska for assault and battery against their husbands. I knew better than that. And 2 days later when I got out of jail, I guess I didn't know better than that. And they took that man to the very hospital that I worked at in surgery, and he had to have surgery. And one more time, the whole staff saw what Karen did, and they took me to jail, I might add, and it turned out to be a terrible, terrible thing. Those doctors there in Lincoln couldn't get that glue off, and they did 2 surgeons down from Creighton University Medical School in Omaha, Nebraska to get that glue off, and there's a paper written about that at Creighton, and anybody in this room's thinking about going to medical school there, you can read about it if you want to. I'd always wanted a paper written about me, but not like this, I gotta tell you. And I would sit in that jail thinking to myself, I am getting out of this marriage. When this guy comes home from the hospital, he's going to glue something to mine shut. And he would have, too. I'm sorry, but he would have, you know. And for those of you who don't know this, that happened to a lady in Kentucky about 3 years ago. It was on the national news, and I was on the Santa Monica Freeway driving home from work. I had a wreck when I heard it. I thought, my God, better her than me, I got to tell you. But anyway, you know, on the brighter side of things here today, Alcoholics Anonymous, like we talked about earlier, has an immense step in this program. And my sponsor made me get on an airplane and fly to Sacramento, California, make amends to my ex-husband where he currently lives. And I tried to tell my sponsor, I'm not sorry that I did that. Therefore, I don't have to make the amends. He said, I don't care whether you're sorry or not. Get in that airplane and get there and do what I'm asking you to do, and maybe one of these days you will be sorry. I'm telling anybody in this room today, when that guy sees me, he kind of backs up, let me tell you. But we were able to sit down and talk and stuff, and I made my amends to him. And I will tell you guys one more time, I walked away from that guy, and I felt the promises of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every single amend I've made, I felt them and stuff. But anyway, you know, we are on talking terms today. We have a good relationship, actually, you know, and I mean, I don't want anything to do with him other than that, but, you know, he's still my children's father. I honor that, and I think that's very important that I do that and stuff. You know, I have to tell you guys something funny. Larry, our speaker tonight, Larry, I arrived here yesterday, and he says, he told Jimmy, he said, I super glued my glasses, and I can't get them apart, and he needed to fix his glasses. He said, well, wait till Karen gets here. She'll know what to do. Well, old Karen couldn't undo it. He had to take it downstairs to the maintenance people, but he finally got his glasses. You guys, I was speaking, I love to tell this story. I was speaking up at Lompoc Prison in Northern California. It's a federal men's penitentiary, and they have this speaker meeting once a month, and they always have somebody come in and so forth. And I was driving through the gate, and they had this great big guard tower there, and you have to push a button, and they say, who are you, and what is your business, and so forth. And I told them who I was here for the AA meeting, and they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any guns on you, firearms, explosives, blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, I don't. And they said, well, Mrs. Garrison, do you have any super glue on you? And those guys were not in AA. The AA people put them up to it. And for the first time in my life, I was absolutely speechless, you guys. And I said, well, no, I don't have any on this. Well, then, come on in. You can hear them laughing up at the tower. You know, you never know what's going to happen here, let me tell you. But anyway, I got involved with the most bizarre man. I divorced this guy one more time and got involved with this poor guy. You know, this man I'm about ready to tell you about is dead from the disease of alcoholism. He died when he was 36 years old, and I was dying right along with him, I got to tell you guys. And But anyway, he told me he was in the mafia. Nobody in Nebraska is in the mafia, for Christ's sakes. And he was lying to me. I was lying to him. It was a typical alcoholic nightmare. Drinking on a daily basis. I was taking Valium for severe tremors I was starting to have. It was beginning to be no more fun, I got to tell you guys. You know, I'm a nurse and I've studied alcoholism. And I know about it before I became one. And it shows me one more time today what our book says is true. Self-knowledge avails us nothing with this disease. It's action that counts. Nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous do we have a chapter called Into Thinking. But we do have one that's called Into Action. And that is the only reason I'm standing here 18 years sober. And the day he came in the hospital told me, we've had it out of you, Karen. You either go into a treatment center or you no longer have this job. Well, you guys, you know what? You don't tell people like me that stuff. And I said, you and what army's going to... I walked out of a job that I love more than the whole world, and I cannot say that enough today. And I drank and I drank and I died 1,000 times over. I went to work at a nursing home there in Lincoln, and what I'm about ready to share with you guys is something I'm not proud to discuss from any AA podium. It took me years in my sobriety before I would ever mention this. I found myself stealing drugs from that nursing home. I was stealing morphine and Demerol and cocaine and Valium, and I'd get my damn hands on. And the reason I was doing that, it's not that I like to take drugs that much. It's that I couldn't drink. And I literally would go into severe withdrawal, you guys, after about 3 hours of the alcohol in my bloodstream. It was just merely to keep me so I could work. Let me tell you, it was not fun for me to do this. And I hated myself so bad I can't begin to tell you and stuff. But my Valium prescriptions had run out in Lincoln, Nebraska. I had 5 at one time, and every one of those doctors, it all happened at once. Either get in here and see us or we're not renewing these scripts, you know. And so here I was in that corner, boy. And I mean, you know, our book talks about how the alcoholic feels like. Dave talked about it last night. I'm gonna die if I drink. I'm gonna die if I don't drink. You know, and that's the position I was in. I understand that. Let me tell you. But anyway, you know, the day came to the people that ran that place came up to me and they said, Karen, what is wrong with you? You are just weird, is what you are. No, you take good care of the patients. You're a good nurse and stuff, but you're just strange. And I remember thinking to myself, you'd be strange too if you had 200 milligrams of Demerol on board. You'd be strange too. And I threw narcotic keys at them and I walked out the door before they fired me. And I went to work at Bryan Memorial Hospital there in Lincoln. And you guys, it's a fine, fine facility. And I was drunk on that. You remember I got that nursing position. And I'm not talking about falling down drunk. I was just maintaining a certain level of alcohol in my bloodstream that I would not shake and have those violent tremors. That is clearly desperation drinking. Our book describes it vividly. And I was in hot water up to my yin-yang, let me tell you. I was literally dying from this disease and I could not seem to stop it, you guys. And long story short, I got caught stealing drugs from that hospital. They, you know, reported that to the State Board of Nursing. And to make a long story shorter and shorter from here today, I wound up on the streets of Nebraska is what happened to me. And you guys, I spent 2 years on the streets. And I traveled to the Midwest. I prostituted myself. And I'll guarantee you one thing, that I have seen and done things that no woman should ever see or do. And I'm still so sick in the head sometimes I think to myself, I wouldn't mind seeing some of them again, you know. And my sponsor assures me I'm still a very ill person, be thinking that kind of crap. And, you know, I've been in nut houses, I've been in deep detoxes, I've been in jails, I've been in institutions. I cannot think of a thing that had me on those streets as a practicing female alcoholic. Things happened to me I would not repeat from this podium this morning. But I'm sure that you have the general idea. And 2 years went by for me. And there I was back there in Lincoln, standing on Skid Row, sucking on a bottle of Mad Dog. If you guys haven't drank Mad Dog, I need to tell you, it's not one of your finer wines, I can assure you. And I literally could not believe what was going on in my life. You know, how did this happen to me? I never once wanted to be like this. And they had this Hilton Hotel adjacent to that Skid Row area. And I remember thinking 2 years ago, I used to stand on top of the Hilton Hotel and drink martinis with surgeons. What am I doing standing on Skid Row drinking with these people? And I rather imagine those folks felt the same way when they arrived there. And like I said, I can't tell you much about it at all. I woke up in an intensive care ward at the very hospital that I was born at, the very hospital I worked at for 19 years, and I will tell you guys clearly that the alcoholic hell for me started the day I got sober. You know, I'm not a very big person. I only weighed 95 pounds the day I got sober, and I was coming off a quarter whatever a day and 200 milligrams of Valium a day. That is a lot of booze, that's a lot of pills, and I had a lot of dying to, let me tell you. You know, they say that most alcohol withdrawal is over with in 3 days, and perhaps it is for some people. It certainly was not for me. It was going to be a long, long time before I was going to start feeling better. And I laid in that intensive care ward. I had tubes come out of my belly. They were draining fluid off my liver. I had IVs going. And I found myself in withdrawal that was so bad I cannot begin to tell you guys. And I laid in that intensive care ward. And I shook and I shook and I died for 30 solid days. And I'd scream at those nurses and say, you get me some Librium, you get me some Valium, you get me something. This is absolutely inhuman. humane that anybody should have this kind of withdrawal. And they said, Karen, listen to us. You need to fill every one of those tremors and maybe you'll never do it again. There's not one single thing wrong with your heart. We're not giving you one single drug for it. But let me tell you what they did do for me. And I will be forever grateful as long as I'm sober in this program. They got about 10 members of Alcoholics Anonymous to come and sit with me. And these people never left me day or night for 30 solid days. And I literally fell in love with these people. And I want to tell you why. There was nobody in my life the day I got sober. My family wanted nothing to do with me. They've been through it too many times. I'm not going to go through it one more time. My mom, who I absolutely adored, had to be hospitalized because me and put on tranquilizers. My mom did not deserve that by a long shot. And I have not forgotten that as I stand here today, although my mom is dead, I have to make constant living amends to that woman. I could do that by being a good member of AA and so forth. But anyway, I just love these people. And I want to point out something here very quickly, and I don't want to insult anybody in this room. Please don't think I'm doing that at all. But it's just my thoughts here. It's my experience that I need to talk about. And I did not make that phone call to the AA. I want everybody to know that. Those people came on their own volition to see me. Those nurses called me, and I called them to ask them to please come and visit me. Left up to me, I'd be dead, let me tell you guys. And I hear people say in AA all the time, we don't go unless the alcoholic calls us. Really? I feel sorry for you if you don't go. I will tell you, I am standing here 18 years sober, ladies and gentlemen, and I never called anybody. And if I remember correctly, I don't think that Dr. Bob ever called Bill Wilson. I think Bill Wilson found him, my favorite commitment in all of Alcoholics Anonymous is my H&I panel at LA County Hospital. It's a bedside panel. I visit that once a month. People are dying from alcoholism. We go in and talk to them. If they don't want to see us, we leave. But we give them the opportunity, let me tell you. And we take literature and so forth. And next month I'll go up there. All those people will be dead. And we'll have 30 new people saying, I'm not an alcoholic. Get out of my room. Yeah, every once in a while we get people out of there, you guys. We have two members of my group, the Pacific group, that we pulled out of LA County Hospital. So, it makes no difference whether they get sober or not. I get to see the situation I was in the day I got sober, and it works for me. So I hope that when somebody asks you someday, would you talk to this person, whether they want you to or not, I hope that you make that attempt, and you got to do what you got to do, though. I'm not knocking anybody, but I know that for me, whenever somebody gives me the opportunity, I am out there. I have to repay what's been given to me big time, let me tell you. But anyway, I fell in love with these people, and at 30 days of sobriety, I walked in that official treatment program at that hospital. I'm a product of a treatment center. I have no opinion on one way or the other, but apparently I went to a fine one because all they talked about was Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's a lot of bad ones out there, you guys, let me tell you, and thank God I went to a good one. And let me tell you what I was like when I was 30 days sober. I turned on you like you cannot even believe when you started telling me what to do. I was just so desperately on day one, but 30 days there was a whole different ball game, let me tell you. And where I went through treatment, a lot of people got kicked out of treatment for fraternizing. I didn't. Nobody wants to fraternize with an orange person, I can assure you. They used to bring the patients over to the hospital and they'd say, look at her, see what's going to happen to you if you keep on drinking, look at her. And I thought, how dare you bring people in my room and say stuff like that? But you guys, you know what, in retrospect today, I am really glad they did that. I get to think about that before I pick up any drinks, let me tell you. And remember how Dave talked last night about how Polly said, how could you do this to me? And the guy told her, one of these days you're either going to love me, if you don't stay sober, it ain't going to make any difference, And that's, I think, what they did that to me and stuff. But anyway, you meet people as you travel here that do things that are going to really piss you off, let me tell you. But you know what, in retrospect, I'm just so glad they did that kind of stuff for me. But anyway, I went into that treatment center. I did not do well in there. As a direct result of my bad behavior, I was in an inpatient 30-day program for 7 months, and I completed all that, and I went to an outpatient program. I went to evening care program, and aftercare program, blah, blah, blah. Found myself a very, very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Lincoln, Nebraska. And I wasn't doing one thing the way that you teach people in AA to do it. I would tell the new people, you don't need to read the book, and you don't need a sponsor. We can do what we want to do right here. This is an individual program. And needless to say, I was not real popular with the old-timers in Lincoln, Nebraska. And you guys, the old-timers in AA are so precious to me as I stand here this morning, but not in 1982. I could have cared less what these people thought. And you can pull your crap around here just for so long, and these old-timers are going to start nailing you one right after the other. God love the mean old-timers in Alcoholics Anonymous. They at least saved my life, let me tell you. And they are dying off right and left, I got to tell you guys, and they have taught me well. And I'll be internally grateful, I got to tell you. But this old guy with 29 years of sobriety grabbed me out of an AA meeting one day, and he said, come outside, I want to talk to you. He said, you stay away from the new people. How dare you tell the new people in AA they don't read the book and they need a sponsor? He said, you're like a typhoid Mary in AA. Everybody dies around you, but you're able to stay sober somehow. He said, you stay away from the new people. And he went on to tell me, there's going to be a man from California speaking in Kearney, Nebraska this weekend. His name is Clancy. You're going to go meet this man's speaker and ask this man if he will sponsor you. He is a master at dealing with jerks like you. And I heard all about Clancy, and I wanted nothing to do with him, period, because I knew I was going to be in bad, bad trouble. And I got to tell you guys that my fears have been justified 8,000 times over. And I told this old-timer, I said, who do you think you are that you're going to tell me he's going to be my sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous? He said, if you don't get in that car and go with us Saturday, I'm going to tell everybody in Lincoln how you stole money from an AA meeting. And I'll guarantee I was in that car going to Kearney, Nebraska. And I paid that money back, too, by the way. And I will tell you guys from a podium in Kearney, Nebraska, that Clancy literally put the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. My life has never been the same since that talk. And there's a reason for that. For the first time in my sobriety, I was identifying with another alcoholic. And as I understand Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what this thing is all about. I know of no finer speaker in the world than my sponsor. I'm not saying that you need to believe that. It's only important that I believe that. And by the end of that talk, I wanted that man for my sponsor. That, ladies and gentlemen, is how God works in my life. I wouldn't have asked that man to sponsor me in a million years. Trust me, I wouldn't have asked him. And I found myself walk across that convention floor and ask that man to be my sponsor. And he looked at me and he said, I don't sponsor crazy people like you. And that's a lie anyway. He sponsors people crazier than I ever thought of being. And I thought to myself, what did he say that to me for? He doesn't even know me. And I wasn't aware of the fact this old-timer called him 2 weeks prior to him coming to Nebraska and asked him if they brought me, if he would talk to me. He said, of course I will. And he knew my game, let me tell you. And I was standing in my little white dress on, my little white gloves on, and acting like an angel. And he saw right through my crap, I got to tell you. And thank God he saw through. And he said, Karen, I don't like to sponsor people on long-distance basis, but I'm going to do this for you. Because if I don't do it for you, you'll probably go die somewhere. But he said, I'm going to tell you something, little girl, and you better listen to me real good, because I'm going to say it one time and one time only. You're going to call me every day. I tell you not to call me every day. You are going to read that book. You're going to sponsor people. You're become an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You're not going to argue with me. You're not going to defend your actions to me. You're going to do what I ask you to do. And if you don't want to do that, then get yourself a different sponsor. And you guys, you want to talk about we stood at the turning point. This is the day when my recovery really did begin in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I said two words that I almost fell over when I said them. I said, yes, sir. I don't tell people, yes, sir. Trust me, I do not. And one more time, God knew for me, I can't do for myself, apparently. Respect's got to start with me somewhere. You might as well start with my sponsor, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went back to Lincoln. I became very, very active in AA in the right way. One of my sponsoring a lot of women in that town. I'm not bragging about that. It is not that much fun to sponsor 56 crazy women in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I grew to love those women very, very much, and I'll tell you why. They literally showed me the first 4 years of my sobriety what to do and what not to do in this program. And every one of those women is still sober today, with the exception of one, and she died in a car accident when she was 13 years sober. But she died sober, you guys, and it wasn't because of me. They were active members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it wasn't long before my sponsor was telling me, I want you to get that nursing license back. And I tried to tell this man, I cannot have that kind of humiliation. He said, Karen, are you arguing with me? And I said, no. He said, get the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, tell those people that you've been sober in AA for a year and a half, you'd like the opportunity to get your nursing license back. And you guys, I knew it wasn't going to work, but I did it anyway. And that's without a doubt the most important thing I can say in this room today. I did what my sponsor asked me to do, whether I thought would work or not. And I asked him for my license back. And they looked at me like I had just grown horns on the top of my head, I can assure you. And they said, how many links are you willing to go to? And I had to do a lot, you guys. I had to take crap off people for 2 years that I wouldn't hire to mow my own lawn, if you know the truth. And I had to keep my mouth shut in the process, too. And one of the happiest days of my life occurred 15 years ago last April, when one more time I was jerked in front of the State Board of Nursing Nebraska, and what they told me brought me to my knees for the first time in Alcoholics Anonymous. They said, welcome home, you're fully reinstated as a registered nurse. And as a gift from AA, I do not deserve that, but I intend to take it, I got to tell you. And, you know, I went out to visit Southern California a few times. I fell in love with Southern California AA. I know that you feel the same way I do. I believe I'm in the mecca of AA in the whole world. I'm sure you believe that too. You should believe that. We should all believe that at our respective areas. But I told my sponsor on the phone one day, I want to move to Los Angeles. I want to live on that crazy Venice Beach with all those crazy people. I knew I'd fit like a glove, not been wrong about that either. I want to work at UCLA in the operating room, be in two of their transplant teams, their heart liver transplant teams. I want this and I want that. And every single one of those things have come true for me. And those are all gifts from AA. I don't deserve it, but I intend to take it. I got to tell you. You know, before I sit down here today, I'm going to have just enough time to tell this story. You guys, you know, this pretty much sums up sponsorship for me. I love the topic of this conference this weekend. I know of nothing more important to talk about now, Alcoholics Anonymous, and sponsorship. Because without sponsorship, I'd have died from this disease. I'd have just died in the water, let me tell you. I wouldn't have done a thing on my own, let me tell you guys. And, you know, my sponsor taught me early on. He said, Karen, where are you at with your spiritual program? And I said, I don't have a spiritual program. I don't believe in God. And he flipped open the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said, young lady, you don't have to believe in anything. You just got to start doing something in that area. And he showed me where it says, I get a daily reprieve contingent on a spiritual maintenance with a power greater than myself. He went on to tell me there's going to come a day in your sobriety when I can't help you, AA can't help you, and you have better well have a God in your life. You're going to be dead from the disease of alcoholism. That's the part in the book where they talk about no mental defense. It's got to come from a power. No human power can relieve your alcoholism. God couldn't. What if he were Satan? And I said, all right, what do you want me to do? He said, I want you to get on your knees in the morning and get on your knees at night, and I want you to pray for God's will. Do not pray for things. Pray for God's will and the power to carry that out. Then get off your knees and start patterning your life to what you think God's will might be for you. And I said, well, what is God's will? And he said, how the hell am I supposed to know? I'm not God. He said, any AA member that tells you they know what God's will is, I would suggest you get away from them very quickly. You know. He said, I just believe that if I'm doing the right thing, do what's in front of me to do, that's perhaps God's will for me. When I feel good about what I'm doing, that is God's will, apparently. And so I thought, I didn't understand any of this stuff, you guys. I just started doing it, you know. And he said, like, why don't you answer the phone when it rings, just for starters, you know? Well, when I got sober, Nay, I did not have a telephone, you guys. It took me a long time to get a telephone. By the time I got one, I didn't want to answer. It was bill collectors, you know. But my sponsor taught me, pick up the phone and deal with your problems. We do not run from our problems here. We run to our problems, not from them. And we do what we don't want to do, and we get to stay sober one day at a time in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I started answering the telephone. And as a direct result, now I'm $86,000 out of debt as a result of answering that telephone. But more importantly, and this is more important than that, you know, my sponsor has taught me to answer that phone in the middle of the night when it rings, too. And, you know, I work the night shift, you guys. And most nights I'm gone working and stuff. But, you know, I sleep during the day and so forth. But, you know, I'd work 72 hours this one particular week. And, you know, we're too hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. I was a bitch is what I was. And I had this night off. And I went to a meeting earlier in the evening. I went home and I went to bed early. And the phone rang about 2 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, that's either one of the women I sponsor, it's my boss wanting me to come to work. And I'm not answering that phone. I can't even think straight anymore. And this voice in my head said, pick up the telephone, somebody might be in trouble. You guys have taught me well, I'll tell you. Anyway, I answered the phone, and sure enough, it was my boss. And she said, I've got 18 people sick over here tonight. We're going to do a liver transplant on a girl that's about 3 years old. I need your help. Now get over here and help me. I said, I am not coming over there. I can't even think straight. I'm dangerous on my feet is what I was. And she said, I have no choice but to ask you to come. I have nobody to do this. She said, throw some cold water in your face and get over here. And she hung up on me is what she did. And I was going to call my sponsor, but I don't want to talk to him about nothing at 2 o'clock in the morning. I know what he had told me. Nobody ever died from lack of sleep, Karen. I have to say, well, there's a first time for everything, Clancy. You know, anyway, I just went to work. And I'm so glad I did, you guys. The most precious thing happened to me. And I got over there, and I sent my orderly upstairs to bring our little patient down to surgery, little 3-year-old little girl that needed a liver transplant, dying from some strange liver thing and stuff. And we got a jet coming from the East Coast to deliver for this child. We had some time to kill and stuff. And anyway, my orderly called me and he says, come out in front and get your patient. You're not going to believe all the people of this family. And I thought, well, that's nice that they have the support. I was so crabby, you guys. And I went out in front, and the first thing I noticed was like 85 people with this family. And I thought, how highly unusual at 4 o'clock in the morning. Highly unusual any time, if you want to know the truth. And the next thing I noticed was the mother. She had the most beautiful blue eyes I've ever seen before in my life. And the dad was good looking and stuff. And I looked down at my little patient. And I got to tell you guys that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to love at a level I never, ever, ever dreamt possible myself. And I ever so gently fell in love with this little baby girl. And she was so sick, she couldn't lift her head off the pillow, she was so sick. And I remember thinking to myself, and you didn't want to be here, you selfish person, you didn't want to be here. I hated myself at that moment. And I thought, I'm going to be the best nurse I have ever been before in my life tonight. And by God, I was too. But in her arms, she had a little bear, and she had a blanket wrapped around that bear, hanging onto him for dear life. And I said, oh, you brought your little bear down to surgery. And she tried to tell me her little bear was going to have a liver transplant. And I said, oh, you're both going to have one. And she said, no, just the bear, you know. Anyway, we sent the family out the waiting room, and that mom was in absolute hysterics, I got to tell you guys. And this little girl looked at me, and she said, why is my mommy crying? Go tell my mommy not to cry. And because of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I've learned in this program, I was able to tell that little girl the truth. And I said, your mommy's crying because your mommy loves you so very, very much. And that seemed to settle her down a little bit and stuff. And we have an anesthesiologist at UCLA that loves to play with the kids. He is just a delight to work with, let me tell you. And so when she got her IV started, the bear got an IV started, and his bag was called Bear, and she thought that was real funny. And when she went to sleep, the bear went to sleep, and it was really quite painless for her, if you want to know the truth and so forth. But I got to tell you guys, that 16-hour transplant did not go well. We almost lost that baby a couple times due to blood loss. I have never seen a team of people pull together like we pulled together for that baby that day. And 16 hours later, she went up to her room with not much hope at all, I got to tell you guys. And well, we said some prayers on that one, let me tell you. And anyway, I became obsessed with this child, and I had to see her again, and I knew she was still alive and so forth. And we have a rule over there, you may not get involved with these transplant plantations. They wonder where the organs come from. We cannot tell them it's best not to see them after surgery. Now, I'll tell anybody in this room today that I'm real good at breaking rules now, aren't I? And I thought, I'm just going to go up and see how she's doing, and I'm not going to talk to anybody. And when she was 6 days post-op from that transplant, I went to her room, and I opened the door to that baby's room. And you guys, I could not believe it was in front of my face. My God, the power of God, the power of God. Here was this little baby girl. It was the first time she left for surgery. She's jumping up and down in her crib. She had diapers hanging around her knees. She had that baby, that bear in one arm. She had a baby bottle in the other. And she put Band-Aids all over this bear. He had Band-Aids on his eyes, his ears, his nose, and I mean everywhere. And I stood in that hall, and I just cried like a baby. It is not cool to see the nursing staff bawl, let me tell you. And that whole room full of people were in there. And something caught my eye, the corner of my eye. And I'll be damned if our book wasn't sitting on that kid's dresser. And it all made sense to me now. And I was in that room like a flash. And I said to the mother, I said, whose book is that? And she said, well, that's my book. I remember Alcoholics Anonymous, so is my husband. Her sponsor was there. His sponsor was there. Those 75, 80 people had driven 500 miles to be with his family. They were not from the L.A. area. And I was impressed. Boy, was I impressed, let me tell you. And they showed me one more time what this thing is all about. It's about love and service, and that's all it's about. And I asked the mom, I said, how long have you been sober? And she said, 5 years today. I thought, oh, my God, her little girl for the first time, what a fabulous birthday present and stuff. And I walked over to this baby, and she stopped dead in her tracks, and she said, go away, I'm not sick anymore. And I had my scrub clothes on and scared the hell out of her, sweat, didn't I? I said, I didn't come up here to hurt you. I came up here to see how you're doing. And you guys, she gave me her little bear, and she said, you take him home and take care of him. He's so sick and needs a nurse to take care of him. And I told the mom, I said, oh, I can't take that bear home. My God, that bear went to this baby's liver transplant. We put a little plastic bag by her little head for host surgery, you guys. And I said, you really need to keep it as a memento. And she said, Karen, please take it. She wants you to have it. She's got 50 bears in this room. And she did indeed have 50 bears in that room. And I felt like a fool walking down the hall with that bear. But that bear was my most prized possession, the problem of Alcoholics Anonymous, for many, many years. Then it got to be too important to me. When it gets to be too important, we got to get rid of it, folks, let me tell you. And my little granddaughter said, Grandma, can I have that bear? I said, it's Grandma's bear. And I thought, I can't believe I talked to my little granddaughter that way. And she says, Grandma, please let me have him. She knows the whole story, you guys. And I said, Brandy, Grandma, I'll buy you 100 bears. It's my bear. And she said, but I want him, you know. And it got so bad for me, I had to talk to my sponsor about it. You know, what's a 50-year-old woman talking to her sponsor about a bear for? You know, my sponsor told me, quit being so selfish. You have the memory. Let her have the bear, you know. So that bear sits in Lincoln, Nebraska on her dresser, and I visit him. I go to visit him a couple times a year. But anyway, I thought I need to reciprocate here. I obviously was not prepared for a birthday party, and I remembered something that was in my pocket that my sponsor gave me when I was 5 years sober. I was 9 years sober when this happened. It was a medallion for 5 years of sobriety. The reason it's in my pocket at night at work is because there's narcotic use next to that medallion. And I'm telling anybody in this room tonight, when I open that cupboard sometimes, my eyes light up like firecrackers. I can grab that, remember where the hell I'm coming from here. But, you know, I'd hung on that medallion for 4 years too long. I'm a selfish woman, I'm sorry to say. I could not seem to find the woman that was special enough, in my opinion, to give my five-year medallion to for my sponsor. And I knew I'd found her, let me tell you. That's what you do for me eventually here. And I gave it to her. And she says, oh, Karen, I can't take that. My God, Clancy, I said, no, I want you to have it. And I really, really meant that. And so she took my medallion and stuff. And the nurses got wind of all this. We got a cake for the mother. We celebrated her 5 years of sobriety. And I must tell you guys, it was the most magnificent days of my entire life and stuff. And I got my sponsor on the telephone. Within about 3 hours, he had about 50 cars in front of UCLA. And I cannot begin to tell you how proud I was to take those people to my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous at night, the Pacific group. There's been no more contact with them. It's got to be that way for many, many reasons. But I know that little girl is doing very, very well and stuff. And, you know, the point I'm trying to make is here, if I hadn't been taught through sponsorship to pick up the telephone, none of this would have ever happened. How many times in my life have I missed stuff because I wouldn't answer the damn phone when it rang? That'll make me crazy if I think about it long enough. But, you know, people say to me all the time, why do you keep doing it, Karen? Why do you keep doing it? And I know of no greater thing to say to them than our 12th tradition says long form. So that this to the end, that my great blessings may never spoil me, I may forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. And I'm going to say one more thing, and I'm going to shut my mouth here. It has been one hell of a walk from Skid Row in Nebraska to where I stand in Seattle, Washington today. And I think that, but for the grace of God, now, Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have missed it all. Thank you for having me, and thank you for my life.